Hello, it's Dr. Howard Garr, and today's show is a conversation between myself and Dr. Joe Elliott about virtual reality therapy. Hey, it's Dr. Garr for The Shrink Is In, and today I have another guest who's in the digital therapeutics world with me. Dr. Joe Elliott is a psychologist in Texas, in Galveston, exactly, and he's been doing research and services and providing services in the mental health world for, 30 years?
Going on 30 years, 1990s.
Okay. Yep. And he is a provider with virtual reality using an application somewhat different than mine. He's using the Italian version of the virtual reality called Eidigo, as I tend to use the Spanish version of this technology called Amelia. But it basically serves the same purpose and provides the same intervention and results. So without further ado and without stretching this out, I just want to kind of like start off. And I guess my first question would be, you know, as a clinician, I know where I came from in terms of how I stepped into the virtual reality world. You know, people who've watched my shows or listened to me know that, you know, I've been in the wings for years waiting for it to become more economically advantageous to solo practitioners. And that really didn't happen for me until, you know, 2015, 2016. So I'm kind of curious how you fell into the territory, so to speak.
Yes, you know, that's I've been asking myself that, trying to reflect back. Our daughter, I have a 27-year-old daughter who told me recently that she recalled back when she was 10. So more than 15 years ago, I was watching her play with an ancient device called the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. And I made the comments that, hey, you know, someday the games like that, we're going to be inside them and we can do all those things. And it was something along the lines of Star Trek Next Generation holodeck. Of course, I'm from the original series. Mm-hmm. Era, and they had some virtual simulations going on back then. So just the knowledge or the belief, some blue sky thinking that it would just be part of human day-to-day life to have some access to simulations has always been part in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. For therapy proper, just in working with clients with anxiety disorders, PTSD, other situations where we're not able to recreate other than imaginal exposure in the office, VR offered an ability to bring the outside world, the bigger world into the setting here in the office. So, but in between that, so between 15 years ago and 2017, when I finally got to put on a real VR head-mounted display and got hooked and said, oh, yeah, I've got to get this. I'm not quite sure where I began to hear about the treatment. I know in looking through journal articles and talking to colleagues and hearing about the enterprise level services that are being offered, places like the Institute of Creative Technologies at USC and mm-hmm. the VR Medical Center, which is in Coronado, I think.
Right.
The having read about them, but realizing that there was not going to be, you know, an immediate trickling down from those big agencies to our private practices. Just wondering for myself, you know, as soon as possible, let's get some additional tools in the you know, in the counseling sessions.
Yeah, I saw it. I got exposed to it probably 23 years ago, 24 years ago, when Skip Rizzo was doing his work, and I kind of came across him, and he had this virtual classroom for treating ADHD kids, and I thought that was just genius in terms of, you know, assessment and treatment, because what we had and probably what we still have is, you know, teacher rating forms, parent rating forms, and then a couple of these, you know, computerized generated tests like, you know, the TOVA or the Connor CPT that are just, you know, correlational at best. And I thought, oh, this is great. But he was like out of the game of the classroom at that point and kind of in, you know, working on Brave Mind. And I figured, all right, I'll just wait. And then 2012 or 2013, Virtually Better was the only company in town that had a platform for VR, but they were, as you're aware, were oriented towards larger institutions and research facilities, and didn't really look at people like us as a market. And then until, you know, 2015, 2016, it kind of like became viable and cost effective. But I always kind of was one of those people who always looked at technology and tried to in kind of like utilize it in private practice, because I thought there's got to be a way to speed up therapeutic treatments and get people more interested and actually more involved. And also save me, you know, when you're working with people who are like, have, let's say, you know, fear of driving, you got to be in the car with them, you know, eventually you have to be driving with them or flying with them. But, you know, this saved all of that time and effort and cost to do it with a virtual reality. So, you know, you didn't have to have the imaginative abilities that most people really don't have. And you didn't have to invest the time and energy to spend long periods of time, you know, treating somebody or put your life in danger.
Right, right. So, you know, I maybe as we had mentioned, some things can be fixed in post, because I you shook loose a memory. My immediate entree into virtual environments came while I was trying to visit virtual museums and trying to find out where there were some opportunities to be involved in that aspect, just fascinated by being in there, and that began to sink in or began to wonder what are some resources that are available for therapists, mm-hmm. and for applications. And then what you alluded to and looking around saying, well, there's I'm reading about this great system, but they say I can get started for a low introductory price of $15,000 for the headset. And then I can buy the subscription to the software. I remember reading one article that they said that now the horizon is much brighter because the price is down to $5,000. And so it's a lot more, approachable, a lot more accessible. I thought, okay, well, maybe some agencies can pony that up, but as an individual practitioner, $5K is still, mm-hmm. still prohibitive for me. But mentioning Brave Mind, it was one of the first software programs that I found out about, moving from virtual museums and interest in how to create them or learn more about them, and said, okay, so what's the therapeutic world or what sort of resources are there? And found Skip Rizzo's work and actually got to speak to him on a few occasions, and they, after some back and forth, they granted me a a materials transfer agreement for a couple of years licensed to be able to look into how BraveMind can be used to help out civilians who are experiencing PTSD. So that was my first exposure to treatment was in the BraveMind application that I got from ICT, Institute of Creative Technology.
Yeah, well, that was great.
They're very generous and letting me poke about with it and take a look at the that system.
Yeah, so they were the biggest player around until I guess 3-4 years ago, where there's been like a mushrooming of small startups in the VR mixed reality kind of world, and now they're kind of shifting with I guess combinations of VR and AI and all sorts of variations that might be able to use in clinical practice. So I think we're kind of in the beginning of the revolution, so to speak.
I agree. I think that we are in the epoch of expanding from that enterprise level focus, expansion to the professional consumer market. And that's you and me, the professional consumers. And so we, that the agency, the enterprise level was definitely the first natural step. But now the knowledge and the resources are becoming more and more accessible to folks on our level, the independent practitioners and the small agencies. And yes, as you mentioned, the mushrooming, and along with the mushrooming comes the morphing, all the different groups that appear. And that was something that I noted in a talk I gave a little while ago. I gave a snapshot of this. It was actually a screenshot of a whole bunch of different organizations, companies that had opened. And I said, this is from last year. So, I can't tell you which one of these companies still exist, or they've combined or restructured, or have just not survived. Yeah. And that was in the answer of your question about how I got into the processes that I use now. As you mentioned, I use a treatment suite named Idago. And I asked them, I said, where does this come from? And it actually is ID, Id, and Ego. Yeah. So it's their homage to two of the three Freudian structures, and that they're clinical psychologists in Italy that founded this company back in 2014, 2012, somewhere in the early 2010s. And I was actually familiar with Amelia, which at that time was named Sias, right, which has now become Amelia with XR Health, right. I just recently heard, yep. Which looks very exciting. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, my wife and I are Italophiles. And okay. We're planning on doing the expat thing for a while someday. Mm-hmm. And so I just naturally wondered, well, what sort of treatment and VR tools are over there? And that's how I found Idago, and just began networking and making connections among future colleagues. No telling how long we'll be there, but I promised my wife I would take her to Italy for a while.
Oh, okay. Wow. So Idago, is that the one with other guys who were on America's Got Talent?
Yes. Did you see that?
And I watched it when it happened. I went, that's a great technique and cool, but that's not a million-dollar show. I mean, I figured they just did it to promote themselves, but it, yeah, it was pretty neat.
That's right. I think Howie Mandel,
Yeah.
of the celebrities that said, "Oh my gosh, I love." That's right. They so they have some of that. They currently independent practitioners, they provide a treatment suite of 9 apps, and each app has several virtual environments. And a couple of those apps are relaxation, but then others are simple phobia or anxiety based. I've most recently used the air travel anxiety app, and then also they have a cognitive rehabilitation app. And I've got a client with who is post-stroke that I run through, among others. I sometimes use that app for running her through some exercises.
I think that I don't know if you ever watched or played with the Richie's Plank.
Yes. That was when I was trying to find out what the most current, or what is the main VR rig being used by clinicians. I looked around. I do work at the University of Texas Medical Branch here in Galveston, and so I just asked the office of the IRB, since they're in the know. I said, is there anybody using virtual reality on campus? And they said, they said, well, there is one professor. And so they told me his name, and I made an appointment, went over and saw him. And he's actually not a psychologist. He is a physical therapy faculty member. And he was using virtual reality to evoke fear of falling. And so, circling back, yes, I actually said, if you'll let me play with your VR gear, I'll be one of your subjects. Mm-hmm. And so I put it on, and it was Richie's Plank that he used to cause fear of falling.
Yeah.
That he would then use. He was actually studying balance in folks' Parkinson's patients. And so he would, for the normal controls, he would give us fear of falling off of Richie's Plank to then measure how we would shift our balance.
Yeah.
And it was based on my getting to know him that I first acquired an HTC Vive Pro I. That was the first equipment I got because of, I found another professional that was using it. So I used that as an informal endorsement.
Yeah, I used it therapeutically for people who had fear of heights. So, all the platforms, if you think about them, they're very generalized, and eventually patients become inoculated. And so they're not, you don't really get that sense of anxiety from them because, they're immune. So I would then move on to Richie's Plank. And it was like, as Les Posen from Australia calls it the low bearing fruit in VR. Yeah.
Yes.
He said, because it doesn't matter. Most people are going to respond to it, whether they have a fear of heights or not.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I haven't seen Amelia's app for acrophobia, for fear of heights, but the one from Adego had it. What you're talking about, it offers several VEs so that they don't get so inoculated by the app specifics that they begin to lose the arousal, the anxiety arousal that's necessary for the habituation to work. And so they have a mine shaft and an elevator, and also, or a glass elevator, and also a task they call just the platforms. And you can program your choice of platform with a railing, or platform without the railing. So they trade those up, or the therapist can trade through those to keep that anxiety fresh, if you will. But right. I don't know what I'm sure Amelia has something, at least one or two of those.
Well, they have the glass elevator that goes up on the outside of the building, and you You take the elevator to, at its highest point, there's a kind of like a balcony. And you walk out, you know, the avatar walks on a balcony. And then you could place the person at three different levels to the edge of the balcony. And then there are like, you know, VR environments where you're at the edge of a building. You're on the, you know, the, in Barcelona, there's a building. In New York, there's a building. And I think there's one other. But the glass elevator is like the gold standard, I think, in terms of you know, working with VR patients, because you have a glass floor, and you know, there isn't really a lot of security in that environment for you to hang on to. And so I've used that. That's one of my favorites. I use that all the time. But I think all the platforms have certain limitations, because they have to come up with general environments, and I think it's much more important sometimes to be come up with specific environments for patients, and so that requires a little bit more work on the clinician's part to kind of be a little bit more creative. And at one point, I was going to develop a bank of VR environments. And I started, so I had like insects and roads, certain highways, certain bridges,
right.
You know, that I found very useful. So I'm on Long Island, and there are people who have literally videotaped in 360 video the entire length of the Long Island Expressway. And so I could pick a section, because I like there's one section, it's exit like 40 and 39, where it's a very, very long time period between the two exits. And so people who have difficulty driving and fearing the road panic because they can't get off fast enough. You know, they don't know if they can get off fast enough. And so I have people that literally get off the highway at 41, drive the service road, get back on 38.
Wow.
Just to get around that section of the road.
Right. Right. Yeah, I know that the folks at VRMC use American Trucker Simulator, and a lot of their folks are from Europe, where there was a lot of European highways, the autobahns and such, that are recreated in on that. But down on Galveston Island, we don't have that yet. I actually a first client I talked about, the first exposure I had to therapeutic VR was in BraveMind. But when it came to actually putting one of my clients in, it was driving anxiety. And so I used Google Earth VR with Street View. But there's not a cabin, you know, it's from the Google car that goes around taking the, taking 360 stills, or they're stills that are mosaic together.
Right.
So definitely a lot of obvious drawbacks, but just some immersion in something that client was familiar with. I loved your idea. You told me about holding your camera out the
moonroof.
The moonroof. Yeah. I'm going to try something along similar lines, but I'm going to put it on my head, and I'm going to hunker down and drive. As long as I can see, I'm going to drive some of the routes here in the local area, which I think hopefully we'll get something useful for local folks.
Yeah.
But that's the what you mentioned is the current biggest need that I have, that we need some client specific customized environment, at least a few rooms that can be recreated according to the specs that the client provides. I have a client who was assaulted in an acquaintance's house. So the most effective scenario VE for her will be the two or three rooms in that acquaintance's house. But I'm a site guy, not a developer.
Yeah.
And that, and I think that's part of the that this next wave, this expansion to the professional consumer level, will include networking with developers and getting more and more opportunities to custom create or order, you know, request and have develop custom created VEs.
Yeah, I told you I had a 360 camera I used for one. I actually used it twice. Once because of this kid who had problems with insects who never showed up. And then the other one, I thought it should be something for dental phobias. And so I convinced my dentist to let me put a 360 camera in one of his operative seats and have just a 360 of the room so I could use that. And I did it, but I never used that one either.
Oh, I love it though. That's so. Do you have that? You still have the that video file though, right?
Yeah.
But I go, okay. I may want to license that from you.
Okay.
That's good to know. Well, you know, that is the kind of things that we've been talking about is sharing ideas and learning from each other. Me learning more from you than vice versa because of the extra. The years that you have on me in VR treatment. But you know, I think at this point we all have some, we're going to build up our files of video clips or 360 videos or Matterport environments that we've uploaded, and we can share those.
I also think that that's kind of what the developers need to do. All these platforms that have fixed computer generated environments should really, and some of them have done it. I mean, they've created situations or methods of importing external videos. So I think C2Care out of France, which neither one of us are connected to. And then Limbix used to do that, but I don't think they do that any longer. I don't know. I haven't seen their platform in years. But those are the only two that I know of. But I think that makes a lot of sense to be able to import specific videos that may approach the environment that the individual has difficulty with. It doesn't have to be exact, but it could be, you know, if someone has trouble with hilly roads or roads without shoulders or whatever, you can find stuff like that on the internet.
Right. Right.
You know, I think the virtual plane environments are good in across the board. I think that's pretty easy. But driving is a little more difficult. But I also think treating driving patients, people have their fear of driving, it's more difficult than treating someone with a very specified, you know, like a fear of flying in a sense, in comparison. Because, it, you know, I always tell my patients there's a certain amount of denial you need. And if you can't deny, how do you get in a car and drive? Because, you know, there's so many variables and so many unknowns that you have to be able to, you know, somehow put away to be able to function as a driver. In a plane, you don't have to do anything. I mean, you know, it's the pilot's flying. You're just sitting there. But right. If you have to focus on what's going on and you're now anxious and, you know, you're looking around and you're looking at all the other drivers and the cars and the trucks, that's you know, that's harder to get rid of because there's a certain amount of reality there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And also to our previous point with at least the first client that comes to mind that the one that I used Google, I hope I can say that. I guess you can bleep me out if I'm not supposed to say that name. I would think, hey, some free press perhaps. Anyway, when I used that commercial off the shelf product, then it was necessary because only certain intersections in town and certain stretches of highway. So to your point, well, for instance, talk about the Long Island Expressway, that section between, you know, 39 and 41, you know, that's a specific one. So even when we have some therapy specific driving suites, where there still needs to be, that's the next step, is collaboration between therapists and some content designers to create smaller than big games. I don't begrudge the designers trying to make a living, but also the ones saying they really want to break into Pixar or Disney or Epic Games or something. And but we at our level, the private practitioner, we're not able to pay five and six figures for the level of things that I think the techs are still thinking of. I think as a little bit more time passes and there's more gig / contract economy, that we'll find a growing pool of folks.
I also think it has to do with, I guess, the technology in itself is not as compelling as it needs to be. So when VR or XR, MXR, whenever it becomes so widespread in the mainstream world, I think when that happens, it's going to open up doors. And I think the problem really is that these companies that start up, they're small, and at least in our realm, they're small and their market is small. So they don't have enough presence in the market to be as profitable as they need to be to then generalize that into product development. So, I guess my example is that there are 1,000 licensed psychologists on Long Island. Long Island is made up of Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau, and Suffolk. And people in Brooklyn and Queens don't believe that they live on Long Island because they're snobs about it. They think, oh, yes, that's just not us. That's we're the city. That's Long Island. But anyway, so if I just take the two counties, Nassau and Suffolk, which probably comprise, 3 to 4 million people, those two counties, there are, as I remember, about 1,000 licensed psychologists in Nassau County and 1,000 licensed psychologists in Suffolk County. Now, of those, and I'm not counting marriage and family therapists, social workers, psychiatrists, whatever other clinicians are out there, and there are other clinicians who are licensed, but I could count on my hands the number of clinicians using virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. So the percentage of clinicians who are using this technology is so small. And many of the people on the island, for the most part, don't even know it exists or what it is. And so it creates a situation where these entities, these companies, have a huge problem in front of them, which is, how do we market this? How do we get this even out into the real world so that people understand that, virtual reality is not just gaming, and virtual reality has therapeutic intervention abilities, and people should learn how to use it. So, mm-hmm. You and I are like outliers in the clinical world. And the reality is that my experience is that clinicians are tech phobic. And I think that they are so ultra conservative and cautious, and they don't take on a technology or a skill set that they weren't trained in graduate school.
And I
think that they're apprehensive about anything that they don't understand, but they don't take the time to understand the implications of what VR can actually do. And so I spend a lot of time educating clinicians on the use of VR and the benefit of VR, because to me, it speeds up the entire therapeutic process. And people who have phobias and anxieties actually do very well fairly quickly if they kind of follow through with the procedures and the homeworks and doing what they need to do.
The homework is so key, yes.
And I think VR has that kind of like a entertainment value, and B, it has a, you know, an idea that it's unique and different, which kind of makes it a little bit more attractive to people as opposed to, you know, just talk therapy. But I think that without having mass appeal, it's going to like stagger along in little baby steps. And a lot of these companies are not going to have the money to do what they need to do to develop it. So even if they have a good product, like Limbix, I've ever saw them, but Limbix had a great product in terms of doing therapy as an avatar in the same virtual environment as your patient, who also was an avatar. And I thought it would work well for groups, and I thought it would work well and you know, for clinical work, but it needed a little tweaking for my use. And they got a lot of good feedback on their product, but they couldn't market it. They couldn't sell it.
Right.
And so they went under, which was unfortunate, but that's kind of where we are, that clinicians just don't pick up on new technologies. And of course, the old psychology joke is that it takes 20 years for any technology to become widely accepted in clinical practice. And my conception is that virtual reality is only like 6 years old. It's been around for a long time, but I think in terms of its awareness and knowledge base, it's really only about 6 years old. So we have 14 more years to go. You know, and if you look at like research in VR, in 1985 there was one article about VR. And 2017 there were 1,000. I don't have any data after that, so I don't know. But you can see the progression of the work, and I get calls all the time from kids. To me, they're kids, you know. Yeah, they're college kids who saying, "We're studying VR in graduates in school. You know, we have a module on it. We want to know more about it." Or, "I'm working on a paper, or I'm working on my degree, and I want to work with VR." And that's only happened in the last year or two, where I've been getting those calls. So I think it's starting to take off. But I also think, as you said earlier, there's going to be a major pruning going on here. And I think that there's going to be a couple of survivors. But then a lot of these companies are just not going to be able to, you know, exist. And I always, you know, I have these people who consult with me about their practice and their particular product. And I go, "You understand that any hospital institution, any large institution, they're going to buy one system. They're not investing in multiple systems." Right. And so if you want to be marketable, your system really has to be good, and it has to cover enough bases that some institutions can say, "Yeah, I think if we invest in this product, we'll make money, you know, we'll turn a profit." And so, like, you know, you and I, we have a small kind of practice where we can control everything. But mm-hmm. in a hospital institution of some sort, they're going to need a department. They're going to need somebody who's going to be in charge of, you know, the VR equipment, or who's going to be, you know, monitoring who has what. And they're going to always look at what's the return on our investment.
Exactly. You
know? So the biggest push in the last couple of years was trying to get FDA approval so that you can then get reimbursed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of the companies are starting to go in that direction. Because they figure that that's the only way that some institution is going to buy them, because they now know they could bill for it and get a return. Now, I always kind of laughingly say, it doesn't matter to me. In mental health, it doesn't matter. It's still billable. It's still reimbursable because it's therapy. And I always tell people, it's just VR is a tool. That's all it is. I'm using a tool to enhance and speed up exposure therapy. Mm-hmm. That's it. So I bill as if it was therapy, because that's the way I look at it. But in other fields, it doesn't work that way. So like in PT or OT, or even like, you know, patient education, whatever, I think they have to come up with a different system of billing to make it worthwhile. But I think because of that concept, there's going to be a couple of major players left. And I think a lot of these other little companies are just probably going to fall by the wayside.
Think that we're at the end of the love affair of the dream of the metaverse that was overinflated. And what is the curve that ends in the trough of despair or the trough of disillusionment that follows the height?
That's happened many times in
Whatever. But yes, and here's the next one. But you're right. The difficulty for any size tech or slash developer company when it comes to mental health therapy, mental health providers is the so far we're such a small group. I think you on your international directory, you have 60 something folks,
60,
right?
yeah, right.
I'm on the ABCT's directory, and that I'm number 41, and very recently got plugged into there. I know Amelia boasts a couple thousand therapists. They
Yeah.
say, but that's 70 countries.
Yeah, and most of them are out of this country.
And then Edago has several hundred. And they're well, up until I came along, they're only in Italy so far. I'm the first foreigner to deploy it. So that in globally, we are a minuscule group. And as you were saying, what you said a little while ago about how the early on I picture, you and I are the fish with the forearms that are coming up onto the evolving up onto the land for the next step in evolution of the mental health VR mental health providers.
So where do you think this is all going to go? What do you think is going to be the next couple of steps?
Next couple of steps are going to be the both the proliferation of the concerns like Amelia XR Health. They've got a great provision, a great menu of services. There will be a couple of other folks that are going to create suites of treatment apps, and then it's going to take some word of mouth from folks like you and me spreading the word and educating clinicians, getting them to try it out. And I think there's going to be an increase. There needs to be an increase in the just some mentoring from the agency levels, the enterprise agency levels, down to folks at our level of getting keeping us mindful of the ethics of providing it. If not credentialing is a little bit farther off, but some hands-on, maybe hand-to-hand trainings for folks, which will be occurring first at either these enterprises. I know that ICT, not ICT, but VRMC. Maybe ICT has some trainings. The VRMC, Virtual Reality Medical Center, offers some online trainings. They're not, since COVID, they haven't had any face-to-face. But then at the conventions there, I'm seeing more mental health providers among the broader collection of spatial computing community, the AR, VR, XR folks that are showing up. I was at AHH USA last month, and they had several thousand attendees. And I saw under health, there was one mental health, and it was pretty broad about the type of services being provided with kids, pediatric treatments. I myself am interested in the safety aspect, the folks that are becoming mindful or trying to be mindful and circumspect about how to deploy it ethically and carefully. And as an aside, that will be the things that we need enterprise to teach us about the types of equipment that we use in using VR with our clients, specifically some of the haptic devices, some of the rumble seats or the haptic aids that we use. I was reading an article about cobbling together a rumble seat with a subwoofer, and was talking to an owner of a spatial computing audio company about his opinion. And he said, so if you build this and then you invite a client to sit on this chair, and then they have a negative experience, who's going to be liable for that? And I went, oh, that would be me. So yeah. I don't have a degree in bioengineering. So even though it came from a reputable colleague, we're still dependent upon certified and pre-tried some qualified equipment. So and that's way above our head. So long rambling answer, those kind of ancillary resources is what is next for us in terms of providing the providing VR services. And again, my pet being custom VEs per the client.
I have concern about packages of that patients are supposed to use on their own. You know, like these people who are developing products for at-home use. I'm always concerned about poor usage or re-traumatization giving it to somebody else. Like, you know, if they have access to it, and I'll say, here's my friend, you use it. And of course, that friend, maybe they have an epileptic exposure problem. Maybe there's some kind of neurological issue. You don't know, you know, right. And that's not who you gave it to, and they could have a problem with it. So I'm always concerned about people who are selling products directly to the public.
Yeah, I think that's part of the culling you'd mentioned, that, or the, you know, when the dust has settled somewhat, there'd be some a lot of companies that didn't survive, and those companies would think they have a great idea, but they really aren't putting in the work to make a safe product, will be the ones that don't make it, but there could be some problems in the clients that are buying those products.
Yeah, you know, it's always like, you know, my impression is it's a difference between Apple and everybody else. You know, it doesn't mean that Apple comes out with the best and only product in a field, but they play their game right and they market it correctly. And they have a name and a following. And so just by brand loyalty alone, you know, people would buy an Apple product over some other manufacturer who might have a better product, you know, in terms of, you know, specifications. But Apple has a way of marketing that basically guarantees they get a good portion of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, I was always waiting for them to venture into VR because I thought once they stepped in, you know, they would wait for everyone else to like duke it out and then and then figure out where the best place for them was and what would be the best product. And so I thought if they came into the market, that would be a guarantee that this would become a much more widespread and used product line. But you know, at $4,000 they're not going to necessarily buy a lot of people, but you know, they already have the next generation that's kind of designed and built. And I think when it becomes fairly, I guess, inexpensive, or inexpensive enough that the public will buy it, I think that that's when we'll see somewhat of a revolution. And I also think that the one thing about VR that's a little unsettling is you're in a virtual environment, and therefore you're excluded from your real environment. And so that combination of, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality, if that could be melded properly, then that would be a great boon. And it goes back to the, you know, the holodeck, that concept of, you know, walking into a blank room and programming in exactly what you want on the wall, and the environment is created with living, looking kind of avatars who interact with you in such a way that they come across as real enough. That's when that happens. And again, I'm not sure it's going to happen in the next 10 years, but when that happens, then the ability to create complete unique environments for every individual who has a problem and be able to be the clinician standing next to them, walking them through and teaching them how to cope with whatever they're dealing with. That's going to be, you know, revolutionary. Yeah. You know, it's unfortunately we got to stop because we've been going on for well over an hour.
Whoa, we got goodness. Well, I just love talking with you and geeking out on this stuff. So appreciate the getting to talk with you. And yes, time does fly.
I want to thank Dr. Elliott for that great conversation. And if you want to reach out to Dr. Elliott, I'm going to leave his email address underneath my face and his bio underneath this video cast. If you want to reach me, you can reach me at www.drsgurr.com. If you're a provider and you want to list your practice, your virtual reality therapy practice in my directory, or you're a patient seeking virtual reality therapy, go to www.vrttherapist.com. That's vrttherapists.com. Until next time, this is Dr. Gurr for the Shrink Is In.